Charlene Mitchell has been a civil rights activist for over 50 years, participating in the liberation struggle for African Americans, trade union workers, and immigrants, fighting for voting rights, living wages, and fair housing laws. She was the first African American woman to run for president in 1968, nominated by the Communist Party. She recently sat down to talk about her amazing experiences as a communist, an activist, and a presidential candidate in honor of International Women's Day.
I was born in a working class family in Cincinnati, Ohio, in 1930, which was the beginning of what is now called the Great Depression. And we moved from there to Chicago. And we were six brothers and sisters.
Wow.
And then by 1946, at the age of 16, I joined the Communist Party. And I stayed there until 1992.
What experiences led you to choose communism at that age, at such an early age?
Okay, well, first of all, I had been in an organization from the time I was 13 called the American Youth for Democracy. That was 1943, and World War II was going on. And that war was won against, for African Americans, it was against fascism. And it was against discrimination at home. And so it was kind of war on two fronts. And communists were doing that more than anybody else. So I had a great feeling about that. Secondly, by that time, by 1946, there were strikes going on all over the country. And you know, my father was a worker. I grew up with workers, and that's where I was. And at one point, I started to go to a worker school called Abraham Lincoln School, which was a Marxist school. And I read the Communist Manifesto, and I just, like some people, fall in love with Shakespeare. You know, I fell in love with the Communist Manifesto, and mm-hmm. I just thought, you know, this was really cool. You know, this whole idea, you know. Workers of the world, unite. You mm-hmm. have nothing to lose but your chains. And I mean, that to me made sense. Mm-hmm. But more and more I began to understand that there was something about this business of the way people were exploited and the oppression. And then the other thing that kind of opened my eyes in terms of Marx was the way he understood the development of the Western world in terms of what the role that slavery played, you know, and what that meant, and who brought the money, and what that was about. And, you know, that workers in the United States, even after the Civil War, would not have finished their job unless they began to involve African Americans in every part of mm-hmm. life in this country. And there was just nowhere else that I had ever seen that. So that it worked its way through. And even today, I mean, there are people that I know that I can talk to about race and racism, and they really have an empathy, you know, they go beyond sympathy, but they have no concept of how to fight it. They have no if ever you see people really stand up and say, hey, you can't do that, you wonder, what communist background do they come from?
Did you consider yourself a radical at that time?
Yeah.
You did, why?
Yeah. Well, mainly radical was seen, I guess, and still is seen as somebody who acts on what they think. And they do it in a kind of a bold way. Mm-hmm. And that was my feeling about where I was, you know, and I'm still that way. You know, I don't, I cannot imagine, for example, a situation where we can walk out of this building and see the cops, you know, beating up on somebody and not go at least make a telephone call right then and there, you know. But mm-hmm. That's what you do, you know. And, you know, but it doesn't have to start with the person who's being hit. Mm-hmm. It starts with the person who feels the hit. And one should feel it if one is white or black. Mm-hmm.
Can you describe the atmosphere of when the civil rights movement really started to take off and build momentum?
There's a saying that I always use in the movement. Is this time, place, and circumstance. You know, there's a given time that things begin to happen, and they're either happening where you are and there's a certain kind of feeling or motion that's going on, the circumstances that you're in, that it permits you to move in that. And that's what was taking place. I mean, there were everything began to move at once. And it wasn't spontaneous, but it was like spontaneous combustion when it began to happen the way it did, in terms of the Brown versus Board of Education and the decision to go to school, and you know what happened in Little Rock, Arkansas, and then in Georgia, and so on. And so when the first, when the Montgomery boycott began, there had already been just tremendous activity where there was the people who were fighting against the Klan and would not allow, you know, them to dictate what people could do in those areas. And then in Mississippi, there were a lot of fights to register black people to vote. Many, many individuals taking a stance and then organized, and not always started by young people, but you know, certainly picked up by young people, because basically, you know, you looked at people see this as just a young people's fight, but if you recall, young people couldn't vote before they were 18.
Right.
So, but when it really opened up and broke through is when the young people after the Supreme Court decision on Brown versus the Board of Education. And that just drew in young people, you know, all the way. Because this was no longer just a struggle to vote, but it was a struggle to go to school. And it involved every single person in the South, you know, where, you know, there was discrimination in education. And that was all over.
In 1968, you ran for president, nominated by the Communist Party. Can you talk a little bit about the campaign?
The platform was to put an open door policy on the White House, so that in terms of an African-American woman, you know, would change, you know, the way the White House looks and you know, directed it. But the idea was to have the representation of the anti-war movement, the anti-racist movement, and the youth movement brought together within, you know, one campaign. And we thought that we could do that, and that was the kind of campaign that we ran.
Mm-hmm.
So we went all over the country doing that.
Okay, and what was the reaction of the media at the time and the general public to this?
Well, it was really interesting. The New York Times had an article. A woman talked about, you know, that the communists had nominated, you know, an African-American woman. And as usually they describe you as being, you know, no, not bad looking, not too fat, you know. But and then talked about the importance of having done that, and you know, so it was kind of, but it was news.
You worked full time to free Angela Davis in 1970. What was that like?
Well, that was a major event, and it was in October she was arrested. And then in June of 72, she was acquitted. And in that time, we built a movement in this country and in the world that was just, you know, it was formidable. You know, it really was. From every movement within the black community to the churches, to some black elected officials, even I think some white elected officials, but even a number of unions, you know, particular local unions like ILWU and United Electrical Workers, but United Auto Workers, some locals and so on, you know, who sent money, people having concerts of huge names, you know, coming together. You know, that's when I first met Stevie Wonder.
Well, what was that like?
It was really something. It was really something. It was amazing. There was so much postage coming from overseas that the post office would complain, you know, and tell us we would have to send our own truck to pick up the mail. And yes, that's true. You know, everybody who considered themselves a progressive in any way felt that it was important to join.
Why do you think this case became so captivating for so many people?
Well, one, I think that Angela was talk about time, place, and circumstance. I mean, the idea that Angela was an African-American woman who was also an academic, who was also young, and who was a communist. And that bringing all those things together, that people felt that she was not being tried on the basis of any one of those things, but on all of those. And so you were able to bring together all of the people, all the forces who felt that those were important issues.
Mm-hmm. Would you describe yourself as a feminist?
No.
No, okay. Why not?
I am a person who believes very much in race, strongly in the equality of women. I think that feminism has a, how shall I say, it has a, almost a class in and of itself idea. And I believe in a class approach to questions, which is not necessarily a feminist approach to questions. How do you relate to the working class as a whole is missing a lot in the feminist movement. Now that does not mean that it's not missing a lot of other places also, but I don't consider myself those things either.
Okay.
You know, I consider myself a person who as a communist, a socialist, who feels that it's important for the ideas of race, class, and gender to be intermingled, interrelated, intersected, and all of those things. But I just don't see that the feminist, being a feminist, puts you in that necessary, in that category where I am.
And speaking of all the interconnectedness, in what ways do you think that sexism and racism are intertwined or connected in America?
Oh, very much. Very much intertwined. Sexism is one of the victims of racism have been women, you know. And they've been women because women have been forced to play a role, which is a role that they were not ready and did not ask for. It was a role put forth by a certain class, and it was a class of slave owners who owned their wives as much as they owned their slaves. And the women had nothing to say about it because they had no rights. So the importance of having rights, you know, was so important for both the African Americans as a people and women, you know, in terms of gender. And so many things could not have happened without that coming together.
Ms. Mitchell is the founder of the National Committee for Correspondence for Socialism and Democracy. She serves as the national co-chair of the National Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression, the organization that grew out of the campaign to free Angela Davis. For WBAI, this is Amber Cortez.